Is National Legislation the Right Response to a Shifting Cultural Landscape? By Alan Thomas. Conservatives secured a critical win this past month and have firmly shifted the direction of gender policy in America after years of mounting debate. The U.S. Supreme Court upheld Tennessee's Senate Bill 1, which prohibits providing minors with puberty blockers or hormone therapy to treat gender dysphoria, ruling that the law is constitutional. Chief Justice Roberts noted that the legislation carries with it the weight of fierce scientific and policy debates about the safety, efficacy, and propriety of medical treatments in an evolving field. He clarified that the court's role was not to resolve those debates, but simply to determine whether the law violates the Constitution. In doing so, the majority echoed the logic of the Dobbs ruling, emphasizing that policy decisions belong in the hands of the people and their elected representatives. In response, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene announced that she would reintroduce the Protect Children's Innocence Act and pledged to continue pushing for federal legislation. With state sovereignty taking a front seat in many recent Supreme Court rulings, and with so much at stake culturally and politically, we now face a larger question. Should this issue be addressed through national legislation, or is it best left to the states? Our founders labored incessantly over the proper role of the federal government, and in turn, what matters were best left to the states. The instinct to act swiftly on this issue is understandable, because who else should be protected more than our children, especially when the consequences are so permanent? The emotional pull and moral urgency justifiably drive calls for national legislation. As freethinkers, we owe it to posterity to ask ourselves harder political questions, such as, is this a wise course of action? If we pass this law now, what would prevent a future Congress from overturning it when the political pendulum swings? Progressives have long appealed to morality to justify federal overreach. Would they not use the same tools to push their agenda later? For decades, state authority has been eroded under the weight of federal bureaucracy and so-called expertise. With the current court showing a willingness to restore power to the states, should we really rush to entrench federal authority further? Even the most well-intentioned legislation, especially on issues we care deeply about, may set a precedent that others will exploit in radically different ways. Which then begs the question, does federal law shape a state's culture? Or is that cultural fight best left to each state to work through on its own? There is a common hope that if we pass the right legislation, culture will follow. But is that hope misplaced? Does it bypass the hard and necessary work of shaping culture through persuasive conversation, lived example, and local leadership? The appeal of federal action lies in its speed. It feels like a shortcut to victory, but often shortcuts skip over the very ground that needs to be won. Kansas provides a recent and sobering example. After the Dobbs decision, Kansas was in a prime position for its pro-life laws to take effect and protect the unborn. Instead, the state's voters passed a constitutional amendment locking abortion access permanently into law. That same reaction could easily take hold in blue states if Congress tries to outlaw gender transition procedures for minors nationwide. Places like Colorado may double down, passing state laws that entrench those very practices in response. National legislation regularly can harden opposition instead of softening hearts. When Obamacare passed, did it change conservative minds about government-run healthcare? Or did it deepen the divide? Cultural change does not happen at the stroke of a fancy pen. Rather, it requires persuasion, not pressure. That leads to the next question. What are the electoral consequences of pushing policy ahead of persuasion? Abortion has been the millstone that Democrats have hung around the neck of every Republican candidate for decades. Even those running for mayor or state representative, offices with little or no influence on abortion, have found themselves grilled on the issue. How many school board, city council, and state house races have been lost because a candidate fumbled the question? Democrats have mastered the tactic of painting opponents as either heartless or clueless, and Republican candidates have often played right into it. Then came Dobbs, and for the first time in years, federal candidates were gifted an exit ramp. They could rightly say abortion was a state issue and redirect the conversation. So why would we now hand that advantage back? Republicans already struggle to communicate their compassion, often defaulting to logic over emotional connection. Many have yet to show the rhetorical skill to handle nuanced morality questions without stepping into a trap. Even with polling on our side when it comes to gender procedures for minors, why would we risk handing Democrats another line of attack? Federal legislation would put every congressional candidate back in the crosshairs, especially in blue states like Colorado, where the margins are already razor thin. We should ask ourselves whether that fight is worth losing the winnable races that help us shape the broader culture in the first place. The desire to act is noble, and the instinct to protect children is right. But as with any major policy question, we must weigh principle, culture, and strategy together, especially in a time where the American people are so unengaged with the founding principles. Just because we can pass a national law does not mean we should. Cultural change is not imposed, but rather cultivated. If we overreach too quickly, we risk sparking backlash, losing political ground, and hardening the very opposition we hope to persuade. The Supreme Court has opened the door for states to lead in a way that conservatives should celebrate. It is an invitation to do the harder work of shaping culture at the local level, where trust can be built and change can last. As Republicans, it is important to note that we also believe in change beginning locally. Protecting the future generations of our country is an important issue, perhaps the most important. It is so important that we must look at this through the eyes of a founder, analyzing where and how the government should play a role. If we want a future where children are protected and truth is honored, we must fight the right battles in the right places at the right time. That is not weakness or cowardice to act, but rather it shows that we are capable of thinking beyond the present and are willing to fight for posterity.